You're listening to a podcast from funnyinthemiddle.com.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this, we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artists by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on funnyinthemiddle.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking, on with the podcast. Hello and welcome to We Dig Music. I'm Colin, and with me are my comrades and co-host Tracy.
Hey.
And Ian.
Hello.
Each episode we take a letter of the alphabet and pick two bands, one well known, one less so, and talk about what we like, what we don't like, and anything in between. So this one is the letter E, so we're going to be talking about Explosions in the Sky and Elbow.
Yes.
So, Explosions in the Sky. Explosions in the Sky are an instrumental post-rock band from Austin, Texas, formed in 1999 by drummer Chris Haraski and guitarist Michael James, Mark Smith and Munaf Rayani. They sort of swap about between guitar and bass a bit, but
yes.
And I think they've got a live bass player as well. Okay, cool. I've not seen them live ever. I've seen some live stuff on
YouTube.
Saw them live last year. They've got a very good reputation of being an excellent live band.
They really were.
Yeah.
Great.
Obviously these are one of our lesser well-known bands, so not everybody listening is going to know.
I saw them at the Manchester Academy. It was rammed, and that's a pretty big
thing. They're big-ish. They're sort of in the sphere of post-rock.
I saw them at Birmingham Institute, and I think I counted at least three other females there.
Yes, they are one of the post-rock bands that aren't necessarily a massive sausage fest in the audience, which is nice. After years of going to post-rock bands and it just being dudes.
Yeah. So for people that aren't...
To having four.
Yeah.
People that aren't actually that up on it, not everybody knows what post-rock is. So I think we should start by explaining that a little bit.
Yes.
Post-rock is... It's one of my favourite styles of music. It basically is... Music play, it's predominantly instrumental, although sometimes there's vocals. It's predominantly guitar based, but then they do bring in other instruments here and there. And it involves lots of very long songs, going from very, very quiet to very, very loud.
Yes, I heard it described as standard rock band lineup, but using more classical themed arrangements.
Yes, I think that's the sort of dictionary definition of it.
That's usually what I go with.
Whereas my definition of post-rock for years has just been boys' music.
Yes, I've heard you use your boys' music phrase before. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, the thing about boys' music, it's music that seems to elevate the technical over the emotional. And I've sometimes struggled with instrumental bands to find a key in, to find a way into it. But I mean, bands like Explosions in the Sky, though, actually have overridden that for me, and bands like Mogwai and Powder Go Away.
I think it's very emotional.
I think Tracy's got a point. There are a lot of bands who just sound like they've gone, here's a cool part, here's another cool part, let's do it together, and it's very calculated.
The difficult bit is taking it beyond that.
Yeah.
And it's very... I think because the music often doesn't have lyrics, so you don't really know what the song's about, and often the song titles are completely nonsensical or mean absolutely nothing whatsoever. I think it allows, when you're listening to it, to come up with your own interpretation, and it lends it a bit more of like a cinematic kind of thing. That, you know, it's used a lot in soundtracks and stuff like that.
I mean, Explosions in the Sky, actually, their arrangements, they're so vast. They feel like big, lonely landscapes that you can walk around in.
Sonic cathedrals.
And lose yourself. Does that make sense?
It does, but I don't know if it would necessarily to people that aren't familiar with it. So basically, I mean, you can hear songs in the background while we're talking about it, but go and listen to the Spotify playlist that we've made.
Watch any zombie-based film from the last 10 years. Not necessarily Explosions, but definitely post-rock in the soundtrack. Watch any wildlife film that the BBC has done.
I was just going to say, the BBC use Sigur Rós a hell of a lot.
And often Top Gear, actually.
Yeah.
Mogwai and Explosions have been on Top Gear.
Yeah.
So, basically...
You've probably heard it, even if you don't know
it. Yeah, it's excellent background music, but not in a... I can just put this on and not listen to it in a way. Just in a soundtrack kind of way.
Yeah.
It sounds epic.
But at the same time, that with the build-ups and stuff that they do, it's really, really intense.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, if you see Mogwai live, or Godspeed You Black Emperor live, you wouldn't be able to describe it as background music while you were there.
No.
No.
No. It's the dynamics of it live.
Yes.
On record, it's not necessarily going to be as quiet or as loud.
Yeah, because you've got the limitations of the stuff you're playing it back on, but live, you've got so much more scope for the dynamics.
I remember the first time I saw Mono, I was right at the front, and they did an incredibly noisy passage and then cut to just one guitar.
Yeah.
And I could just about hear it over the ringing in my ears.
There's an amazing...
I loved Mono live.
There's an amazing video on... I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. It used to be on Mogwai's website years ago, of Mogwai playing Christmas Steps. And there's a bit where there's a really loud... like the bass comes in with a load of distortion on a really quiet bit. And Stuart Braithwaite, one of the guitarists, is sort of standing right in front of the amp playing this really quiet bit. And the bass comes in early and he nearly jumps off the stage. definitely worth finding.
Yes, that sounds amazing.
So, Explosions in the Sky, as they're the band we're talking about, let's... Now, they don't consider themselves post-rock.
Do they not?
What?
They're lying.
What do they consider themselves?
They're one of these bands that they say, we're just a rock band. They don't consider that they're... But the Sisters of Mercy used to do that. They used to claim not to be a goth band.
Yeah.
Which is clearly not true.
Just embrace it, man. If you are one of the most important bands in the genre, which they are.
Absolutely.
Love it or hate it, they are.
Yeah.
Just own it, man. God. Ridiculous.
See, I only got into them with the last album initially. I came to the party really late. I started with the last album, Wilderness, and then I've worked my way backwards from there.
Right.
Because I loved Wilderness so much.
Yeah. I got into them when they released The Earth Is Not a Cold Dead Place, which I believe was 2003. It was the second new bit of vinyl I ever bought. I bought a couple of second-hand bits, but then I bought a Bright Eyes box set, and the week after I bought that The Earth Is Not a Cold Dead Place by Explosions in the Sky, and it's absolutely stunning. That album is just flawless.
Well, it is. I mean, it's just five tracks, and it's virtually perfect.
Yeah, this is the thing. When you've got really long songs, you don't need filler on the album.
Yeah.
It starts off with the opening track on that first Breath After Coma. It's just got these beautiful, beautiful repetitions and layers and this eerie melody, and then it builds up, and the final 30 seconds of that song is just these crashing cymbals.
Yeah.
And it's just a blissful climax.
Yeah, and it's they're almost, I mean, their guitars are like really nice, beautiful chiming, yeah, reverby, delayed, clean.
Yeah.
Very, very Fender-y.
That's because they're all Fender guys.
Yeah, I think they mostly play Strats, don't they?
Strats and Offsets. So yeah. There's a Jaguar in there, yeah, as well. Never, ever look up their pedal boards.
Right.
That's the one thing that really bugs me about them. Like, they just put them on the floor. Just on the floor, just connected with cables.
Oh, right.
Like fucking heathens.
No cable management or board. Do they... They're unusual for post-rock bands, as particularly on the earlier stuff. They don't actually seem to be using that many, so that might be why.
I think it's pretty much just a delay and a reverb, and that's
and then are they using amp distortion then?
They
don't use it that much.
I think actually the most distortion is coming from the bass.
Right, that makes sense.
I mean, they've got a fairly clean sound for the large part.
At the most, it's slightly overdriven guitars, and then the heaviness is just a crashing, fuzzy bass.
Yeah.
Playing big fuck-off chords.
Yeah.
Which is a post-rock staple as well.
Yes. And then the drums are almost like military, lots of
rolls. I mean, I think they cross over post-rock into the more sort of melodic indie post-rock, like... July Skies or Boards of Canada.
Well, they're post-rock, definitely not post-metal.
Yeah.
Whereas Mogwai started off like
which
that.
Which is probably why I love them so much.
Yeah. So, we were, you know, Cult of Lunary, we were talking about a couple of episodes ago, definitely more metal, but have a similar sort of aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same kind of arrangements.
Much angrier.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
I think they got they came to prominence, I think, for most people by they soundtracked a film and a TV series called Friday Night Lights, which is like a, I think it's about American football players, which is why I've not watched it, because
it's meant to be really good though.
I know, but I have no interest in sport, and then it's a sport that I have no frame of reference for. Yeah, I'd be not interested particularly if it was English football.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that you haven't seen the Mogwai film where they soundtrack a football.
Actually, I have. I've seen Zidane, or is it
Zidane?
Yeah.
Zidane.
It's beautifully done.
I wasn't really paying attention to the visuals very much.
And of course, there's the film Atomic.
Yes, which is. I am more interested in nuclear things than sport, so I actually paid attention to the visuals on that one.
We're doing Mogwai later, aren't we?
We are, so we should sort of...
No, stop talking. No more Stuart Braithwaite stories. I've got one as well.
Yes.
Well, there's one of the songs on The Earth Is Not a Cold Dead Place actually made me think of Mogwai a lot. Your Hand in Mine, I fucking love that song. It's just really yearning, it's really wistful. It's a 3/4 signature, time signature. There's really not enough songs in 3/4 time signatures, I don't think. But it made me think.
I don't think you're looking out for them.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of them around.
But it made me think of Mogwai's Take Me Somewhere Nice.
Yeah.
Same melancholic quality, you know.
We actually played.
It's just heartbreakingly beautiful.
Like me and the guitarist in my band played it when our drummer walked down the aisle with his wife.
We had it on Explosions in the Skies version on the playlist at our wedding while people were having drinks before the speeches type thing.
It is a wedding song.
It's a very wedding-y song, definitely. The title sort of gives that away.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it sounds like that as well.
And that's what we're saying, that I can't usually find anything emotional in a song without lyrics, but this one I really do. I could weep with joy when I listen to this song.
Yeah,
it is super positive, isn't it? I love it.
But then there is a song I found of theirs that had vocals on, spoken vocals, and it completely ruined it. So I take back everything I said about them needing vocals. Have You Passed Through This Night had spoken vocals over it?
What is it, to sample?
No. Is it?
Yeah, it's not them speaking.
It's Thin Red Line, isn't it?
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah.
It ruins it, though.
That, I tell you what, that is the most samplable film in the world.
I've never seen it.
It's a really good film, but there's so many really super poignant bits of war dialogue in there. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, me and the old bass player in the band sat there, watched the film, and were like making notes like, at 1 minute so and so, and about half an hour in, we just fucking give up.
just
basically, we could play the film and play just music over the top of it, and it would be perfect.
Yeah. So they've a lot of the earlier albums, they don't really change the sound that much. They're fairly.
They're like
straightforward.
They're like the AC/DC of post-rock.
They are, but then the most recent album, The Wilderness. There's a bit more electronics on it, and I was wondering if a year or so before that album was released, they toured with Nine Inch Nails. So I think they maybe took a little bit of influence from that, particularly on stuff like Disintegration Anxiety.
And the syncopated rhythms and the clipped guitars in that one.
It
is very different to.
The Earth is Not Cold.
All of a sudden,
I Miss Everyone.
I think it's actually probably my next favourite of their albums after The Earth is Not Cold.
Mine too, actually.
It's definitely up there as one of their best. But they're a bit difficult with Explosions in the Sky, whereas with some of the other bands that we've talked about, there's a lot that we can talk about with the personalities of the bands and stuff like that. They don't really. I don't know if they do interviews particularly. They don't really have much sort of publicity about.
No, I don't even know what any of them look like.
No, they just. And you've seen them live.
When I saw them live, I was too far back.
They just completely let the music do the talking, and I suppose that's fairly admirable.
Yeah.
I mean, I like my rock stars. I like my entertaining people throwing swimming pools out of windows and stuff that. But I don't think Explosions in the Sky are really much for that.
Are we talking about This Will Destroy You at any point?
I can't remember if they're on
because
the list or not.
They are hilariously rock and roll.
Okay.
Like, hilariously. I met Jeremy, the guitarist. I was like, dude, can I do an interview with you? Because I do a radio show. So he's like, yeah. Come find me after our set. So I did. And I found him after, and he was literally rocking on his feet. I was like, when's good for you, man? He's like, it's got to be now. It's got to be now, because in about half an hour's time, I'm going to be so fucked up. And it was honestly, seemingly like I was interviewing Motley Crue, because it was him and the bass player who now quit, and they were, like, they'd been drinking, what's that? Buckfast.
Right.
So they were on a Buckfast and allergy medication.
Are they Scottish?
No.
Right, okay.
No, but they just discovered it while on tour here, so they were like, right. And you shouldn't drink anything with allergy medication. Because,
right.
You know, profound effect. And Buckfast messes you up real hard. And they were just sat there talking. They spent 5 minutes at the start of the interview talking about cock rings. It was, honestly, it was not what I expected from a post-rock band. That might be why Explosions don't do interviews.
Yes.
Because they
they are like that. They just keep it really, really quiet.
That's it. They're out after the show. No one knows what they look like. They're just fucking hell-raising. And everyone's like, who are these American dickheads? I've just been to this really chilled-out gig where there was this beautiful music, and now there's these leery ass hats here. And that could be them. We don't know. No one's going to know. They could be there fucking, you know, hammering nails through people's dicks, which is a Motley Crue thing. They could be doing anything. We don't know. Let's pretend that they are.
They are. That is now my narrative. I'm going with that.
Yeah.
Explosions in the Sky.
Super rock and roll.
I heard they killed somebody with a delay pedal once.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good.
I think we should probably leave it there.
Yeah,
or we get sued.
Talk about a band who definitely doesn't do things like that.
let's go on to Elbow. Elbow are an English indie rock band formed in 1990 in Bury, Greater Manchester, by vocalist guitarist Guy Garvey, Craig Potter on keys, Pete Turner on bass, Mark Potter on guitar, and Richard Jupp on drums.
Richard who?
Jupp.
Okay.
He's the only one that's not in the band anymore.
Is it because his surname was stupid?
It may be, it may be. They were signed to Island Records in 1997. And they recorded a debut album, but then Island Records got bought out by Universal, and the album was never released, but most of the songs turned up on EPs and the first album. So they released a few EPs and then finally released their debut album, Asleep in the Back, in 2001. So that's 11 years after they formed.
Wow.
They were moderately successful for a few years, and then their fourth album, The Seldom Seen Kid, in 2008... catapulted them into massive band territory, mainly due to its anthemic second single, One Day Like This, which was used on the BBC's Olympic coverage, which is what sort of catapulted them.
And was a Mercury Prize winner.
It was, but I think that was afterwards. I think
it was about the most famous band named after a body part. I think so.
They might be. Heart.
Ooh.
I think worldwide, I would have said that Heart is still massive in America.
Ah, that'd do it. There we go.
Plus Barracuda is fucking ace.
It is. Successful derailment.
I'm going to be spending the entire episode trying to think of other bands named after body parts.
Yeah. Comment. Comment. Write in. Tell us. We're keen to know.
Yes, at We Dig Music Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. So, Elbow, I've been kind of with them since the first album. I really loved the really, really early stuff. They were kind of proggy on the first couple of albums. You look like you have an issue with that.
I've been trying.
Yeah.
And I believe I'm in the same territory that Tracy was with Death Cab. I don't hate it. I just don't.
You've not found anything to latch on.
Yeah.
See, I blow hot and cold with them. I'm not a huge fan, and I love some of the big anthems, but then sometimes, I mean, they've been landed with the term dad rock.
They are a bit dad rock, I think.
See, dad rock's a bit more mod, though, isn't it? That's dad rock to me sounds more like Ocean Colour Scene and The Jam, even though my dad doesn't like The Jam at all.
Good man.
Yeah.
Well done.
I mean, I used to think Elbow were pretty dull, and but I quite like them now.
See, I saw them at Latitudes.
Yes.
They came out and they were playing trumpets and stuff like that. There was the start of the set was just like, fucking hell, I didn't see that coming. And then they started playing one of their actual songs and I was like, why did you do that? Why did you do that? I got a fucking musical boner and then boom.
See, I think, and you may argue with this,
yeah.
I really wouldn't be surprised if you do, I think they're unfairly lumped in with bands like Coldplay and Snow Patrol because of their sort of anthemic, you know,
well,
sing-along classic.
They're better than both of those.
They are, definitely. But like I was saying, the early albums are... They've got some really... In fact, no, right even into the newer albums, they've got some really weird subject matter for some of the songs. There's some kind of dark stuff in there. The first song I heard by them was there's a song on the first album called Newborn.
Right.
I actually got into them in a weird way back in the olden days. I got sent a CD in the post by Barfly, which was a load of gig venues around the country. Mm. And back in the sort of 90s and then early 2000s, you used to get occasionally. If you're on mailing lists for something else, you'd occasionally get tapes or CDs sent through the post. And I got this Barfly Session CD that had got Soul Wax on it, and it got Delgado's on it, JJ72, and it got Newborn on it. It was only edited version, so it wasn't like the full 9 minutes or whatever it is. But the opening line of that song is, "I'll be the corpse in your bathtub."
Wow, that's
because it's a song about a married couple who have been together all their lives, and one of them's got Alzheimer's, and it's about sort of their last days, and the person who's still got their brain intact caring for this dying partner. And it's so heavy. There's a couple of songs. There's another one on their second album called Switching Off, which is about choosing which memory you're going to keep as your last memory. So if you know that you're going to die and you've got, right, this is going to be my final thoughts, I'm going to remember that from 30 odd years ago or whatever.
And I do like that song, actually.
And I was, when we were researching, I mean, I knew the songs anyway and I knew the lyrics, but when I was doing sort of research and stuff for this episode, I was on the bus to work and I was listening to that, both of those songs, and reading the lyrics along with it as I was doing it. And I know, Ian, you've mentioned a couple of times songs that you shouldn't listen to on the way to work.
Mm-hmm.
Those two, definitely. Sitting there on the bus going, oh, man.
Yeah.
The vocals in that are really tender.
They're so beautiful.
Really raw.
And
is there an accordion on that song?
I think there may well be.
It's either that or a harmonium. I'm not sure which.
Similar sort of things. Tracy plays the accordion, so she will pick up on these things whenever.
Wherever there's
an accordion. Just wait until a Omnicord turns up. Because they're just weird.
That's brilliant.
Just another strange instrument.
He was playing an Omnicord long.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like them. Yeah, I mean, you got into them through us playing One Day Like This live, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
At open mic nights and stuff.
Playing a cover of that repeatedly eventually converted me. it's a really uplifting anthem. But yeah, the bittersweet lyrics, yeah, I can really key into them as well.
Yeah.
I've only got the Seldom Seen Kid, I think. I thought I had the Take Off and Landing of Everything, but if I do, I can't find it. One of the things I like about Garvey, I love hearing his Manc accent come through.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And singing. I love hearing accent. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I like Scottish bands so much, because I love the accent.
Yeah.
I like it when you can really hear the singer's accent coming through.
Yeah.
Kind of like your favourite, David Gedge.
Oh, God.
And his nasal Leeds twang.
Oh, I hate David Gedge. There we go. He's now a listener of the podcast, probably. they're very, very, very Manchester, but not in a. They've kind of got their own sort of sound. There's not really that many people that sound much like them, because they're unusual sort of instrumentation. And I mean, the dynamics on what's the first song on Seldom Seen Kid?
Starlings.
Starlings, yeah. It starts off really, really quiet, and then there's just this blast of horns.
Yeah. Yeah, I just sort of put that on earlier.
Ian played that earlier. I wasn't expecting that. I love that one, though. I mean, that song, it just leaves me dizzy and breathless.
This is another one of those bands.
There's such heartwarming lyrics.
I'm going to go back and listen to them and be like, no, still don't get it.
The lyrics in that they're so sweet. And it's weird because Guy Garvey, he's a strange looking fucker. But when I listen to him do Starlings and The Bones of You, I completely fall in love with him.
And then you see his weird face.
And I just swoon with joy, you know. It sends me delirious. And
fair enough.
Calm down.
This is going to happen occasionally, isn't it? Do we need to get you a glass of water or something? Behave yourself, woman. They're a great live band. I've seen them a couple of times. I saw them, first time I saw them was when their second album had come out, Cast of Thousands.
I'm sure you were at the same Latitude Festival.
That was the second time I saw them, but the first time I saw them was supporting The Cure at Old Trafford Cricket Ground in Manchester. So it's like a hometown show for them.
That seems like an odd lineup.
It was Move Festival. So it was, I think it was like sponsored by Virgin or something. And it was like, it was a weird lineup because you've got the Cranes opening, who were obviously chosen by The Cure.
Yeah.
Because they're an old goth band from, I think they started in the late 80s, that have toured with The Cure on and off over the years. Then you've got Longview, who were fairly standard Coldplay type indie stuff, then Elbow, then Keane, who were utterly fucking terrible.
Oh, see, there's another band that I put in that same kind of category, isn't it?
I recently left I tried forming a covers band recently, and I joined up with a few other musicians who had previously been in the Keane tribute band.
Wow.
It didn't last very long.
I can't imagine anyone would have. No, obviously. You could say that sentence that I was heading towards, and I'm not doing
just
it.
Just blood trail.
It's best, yeah.
I can't see why you do that.
Why?
Yes. There's a lot of bands that you see why you do a tribute band.
They're one of those bands that I can't see why they would be anybody's favourite band.
Yeah.
I can't see why anyone would do an Elbow tribute band, though.
Yeah. I don't. Well, they're not my favourite band. I don't really know of anybody who's. I've never heard anybody say Elbow are my favourite band.
No.
However, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would say One Day Like This is their favourite song.
Yeah.
But a lot of those people probably don't know anything else by Elbow at all.
No, and probably own all of Coldplay's albums.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
I only like the kind of soft, sweet melodic ones that Elbow do. When they try to go a bit funkier, when they get a bit of a gospel thing going on, it turns me off completely. And it's weird because I'll allow other bands to do it.
I left Depeche Mode last episode.
I was like, oh, I love the gospel in this, and then Elbow do it. I'm like, no, stop that shit.
Fuck off. Dave Garn. As we know how to pronounce it.
Yes.
Yes.
I think we should do a correction, shouldn't we?
Yes, it's Dave Garn.
It's definitely Dave Garn, because we found a YouTube video with him himself correcting people pronouncing it. He didn't correct the presenter of the Nerdist, Chris Hardwick, on the Nerdist podcast.
He just said, "Hi, I'm Dave Garn." That's it. He wasn't like, "You're all fucking wrong." So I think maybe he's just polite.
Yeah. But blame Chris Hardwick from The Nerdist. That's where I learned how to pronounce Dave Gahan's name wrong.
Oh, there you go.
Dave
but
Gahan.
Now we
are. There will be other episodes where I pronounce things wrong.
Yeah.
Such as David Bowie.
Optimus Bowie.
Optimus Bowie himself. I'm actually in the credits for one of Elbow's albums.
Really? Are you?
Yeah. Cast of Thousands. There's the final song on that. No, it's not the final song, it's one of the last songs on there. Grace Under Pressure. There is a the end of the song has got the Glastonbury crowd singing "We Still Believe in Love, So Fuck You." So they recorded that live at Glastonbury and then put out a thing on their website saying, if you're in the crowd at Glastonbury, send us an email, we'll put your name in the credits. And my name is there in the credits. See, I wasn't at Glastonbury.
This is the one. This well, is the one where I was saying the gospel quality of it. It's really dull.
you can't blame me because I wasn't actually there.
You just, shameless opportunist is what you are.
To be fair, I was about 21 at the time. I was bored at work in Virgin Megastore and I saw this thing come up saying, "You want to be on the credits for an Elbow album? Were you at Glastonbury?" I'll say I was.
But that bit at the end of Grace Under Pressure, it's not even the crowd really singing it. It's not them singing it over and over. It's actually just a loop. and it's really irritating. There's a squeak on the first part of the line, and that squeak keeps repeating.
Yeah, because it's I think it's a flare going off or something.
Why would they not have edited that out?
Don't know. I think it works really well. I really like it. I'm proud to have been on that track, even though I wasn't.
Dear me.
Another thing about Elbow, I think they're another band where there's no, like Death Cab for Cutie, there's no real edge to them. They're very cuddly and safe.
Yeah.
And friendly. Guy Garvey's definitely got a reputation for being an incredibly sort of friendly, nice bloke, basically. And I think that comes across in the music. And definitely when he's on stage talking in between the songs.
When he does his six music show.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
There's a little bit more of an edge on some of the stuff he did on his solo album. There's a track called Angela's Eyes on there, which has got this really cool Afrobeat rhythm, and then it's got a really harsh synth noise in it, and it's ace.
It's not.
It is, you're wrong.
No, I don't like it when Guy tries to get funky. He does nothing for me. That album, I do have his solo album, Caught in the Skull.
To be fair, though,
on that album, I mean, give me Unwind or Yesterday from that album. You know, the shambling wonder of the songs.
I think on his next album, he needs to sample you saying "Guy tries to get funky."
The beat drop.
If you want that, Mr. Garvey, we will email you the raw audio. You can have that, and then one of us could actually legally, properly be on the credits to an Elbow album.
Hello, that the shambling, what was it?
Shambling Wonder, I believe I said.
That should be his solo album.
It's beautiful because the end of that track, the vocals build in with a piano piece at the end, and it's just really lovely. It's really dizzying.
Do you go home with a thesaurus? Right, okay, they took the piss out of me for saying this. What am I going to say next week? Because this has been definitely quite dizzying, this one.
Yes.
For sure.
And shambling.
And we've got some shambling in there.
Have you described anything of being a beautiful slice of anything yet? Not today.
Not this week.
That was last week.
I believe that was episode zero.
Oh. We need to set up like a bingo card?
Tracy Bingo.
Yeah. Probably me, Bingo, as well. I think I say
breathless a lot.
You do. You do. That's,
I say loads of things far too much. It's a big one.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we've petered out a little bit.
We may well have done. So should we leave it there?
Yeah, let's do that.
So next episode, it will be the letter F. So we will be talking about Fear Factory and Fleetwood Mac.
And
you hadn't got one prepared this
time. No,
I
have not.
No, I can't think of one.
Funkavogt.
I don't even know who that is.
Well, I do.
Excellent. Well done. So on that note, thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.